Socrates, the only true wisdom consists in knowing that you know nothing.
That's us, dude.
Oh, yeah.
Sun comes up and rises high. It's so hot, it's gonna make me cry. Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord.
Welcome to episode number one of the Modern Masculinity Project. I am your host, Brad Pankey. Thank you for joining, and you've made it here on your own. If you don't know what this podcast is about, I would highly recommend you go back and check out the intro episode to get a kind of a good feel for what each episode will contain. Essentially, I'll be sitting down with other guys, talking about masculinity, talking about being vulnerable, and whatever else comes up. Should be great, but go ahead and give that a listen for a little more detail. I just kind of want to start out by just taking a moment to enjoy this for myself. I've been wanting to launch a podcast for a long time now, as many of you may know, just always talking about it, and I finally made it. Here it is, and it feels really good. Just feels, you know, that sense of accomplishment you get from doing something you wanted to do for a long time, and, you know, I know it's going to take me some time to improve on it, but it just feels good to get it going. It's great to have a creative outlet. With that said, this isn't possible without kind of some other people helping. And I just want to, point out two people, and I know there's plenty of other people that have helped, but, two people really standing out for me just right now in this moment. And one of them is Jana Rogers, for creating the beautiful artwork that you see in iTunes and all the other platforms. But she took the time out of her own days and weeks or whatever to create this beautiful piece of art out of a picture of my dad and I. And I'm just so grateful for her energy and care on that. So thank you, Jana, for that. You should definitely hit her up if you have any graphic design needs. She's fantastic. She's a badass, and she's just fun to work with. So I'll put the links in the show notes. You can hit her up on Instagram or email through her website. And then the second person is Lauren Gaucher. First and foremost, my friend. And secondly, my realtor here in Portland, Oregon. And another just truly inspirational and badass woman that I have in my life that I've been blessed with. And I wouldn't be doing this without her. So, Lauren, you rock. Thank you for inspiring me to do this and kicking me in the ass every so often. So thank you very much. So now to the podcast, and I've been talking about doing it for a while, and you know, now instead of talking about it, I'll probably be bothering a lot of you dudes to help to come on and join me and get talking. But it's been interesting actually asking the guys that have come on so far. It's been telling as to why we men probably need to be having these conversations a lot more. Just the hesitancy a little bit, and it's not to speak down on anybody or anything, but it's just, there is some hesitancy because it seems like that question, that I ask people about coming on, and when I give them the concept, hey, do you want to come on? Here's what we're talking about. There's a lot of skepticism. You know, I'm often met with, you want to do what? Or what's the topic, or how does this work, you know? And some don't know if they have much to offer. And once we get rolling, they have so much to offer. And I think we need a space to be able to put it out there and be confident that we do have a lot to offer. And we do need practice with all this sharing stuff. So I already have several episodes recorded. So hopefully, you know, it gets better, and once guys start hearing it, they'll be comfortable with coming on. Hope to deliver one episode per week every Monday. So, you know, hopefully it'll start to sound like fun, or at least not horrible, so they'll want to come on. But a few details about the show. You can reach me on Twitter. The handle is @mmprojectpod. Maybe an Instagram later, but not really a big social media fan, so we'll see about that. You can also email me. That's a great way to contribute to the show for you ladies who want to submit questions to What Women Wonder. Just two questions that you want to hear men talk about. And the email address is mmprojectpod@gmail.com. Those will all be in the show notes as well. So send feedback, questions, share stories of your own, guys, ladies. And eventually I might kind of fold those into the show, maybe in a recap episode later in the week or something. I don't know yet. We'll see how it goes. With that said, I do want to make a quick comment about the comments that you send in the email or just the feedback. Just ask that it's constructive. A lot of these guys are out here making themselves very vulnerable. I'll be making myself vulnerable. So, you know, attacking them or whatever, it's not the best way to go about it, because, you know, it's not easy what a lot of these guys are doing. And I'm so grateful that they just come on and open up in the best way that they can, that, you know, if they start to feel attacked, it's going to close the whole thing down. And we want more people to come on. So just do your best to be really constructive and positive and, you know, offer different thoughts, perspectives, but just, you know, try to be gentle, which might be a hard ask for the social media world, but just do your best. And I will do my best to read and respond to everything. I do have a full-time job that actually pays me money, so once travel season gets rolling in full, it might be a little more difficult, but just send me everything you got, and I'll be sure to get around to responding and considering what you have to say. I also want to mention that I'm not a therapist, obviously. Probably don't sound like one, but I just want to make sure that that's clear. I'm not a therapist. This show is not intended to serve as a replacement for any form of therapy, even though, you know, people might get something out of it. That's not the intention. If you think you might benefit from therapy, I would highly recommend you go. I go every week. It's fantastic. I would highly encourage everyone to go if you feel like you have something to share, or, you know, you want to seek some improvement of some kind. But, you know, the show is not intended for that. So off to episode number one we go. My first guest is Chris Lowe. I met Chris in 2007 through my full-time job. He provided some excellent photography work we did for an event here in Portland, Oregon. But I hadn't talked to him much between the event last year and the time that we recorded this episode. But after talking with him, I'm so happy I had him on, because he just showed a lot of courage to share openly with me, who was all but a stranger, really. And it was fantastic, because I really learned a lot about what it is to be a real man, I think, from Chris. He's an incredible dude, and I think you'll all really enjoy his take on, you know, fatherhood and just trying to figure this whole thing out, and just being okay with kind of going with the flow. It's really inspiring, and he's just so gentle, the way he moves around the world, and I appreciate it so much. So, also want to note that this was recorded around the time of the Parkland, Florida shooting. And after listening back, I was really struck by the conversation we had about raising boys. So, I hope there's some good insights in there, for y'all to consider. So anyways, here we go. Episode number one of the Modern Masculinity Project. My sweet boy with Chris Lowe.
I rush fast like the rapid river, a rough and heavy, steady flow. The rock stop me for a moment, but I weave above and bend below. I eat what is fed me. I can cause a deadly blow. And still the river flows. Only heaven knows where the two winds blow.
I did college radio.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, so this might, I might have to take myself back to my...
Are you going
to
show me how to do this then?
Radio days. I didn't say I did good.
Tell me about that then. Where did you go
is
to college?
Is this already rolling?
Yeah, we're rolling, man. There's no start to this. This is the start.
I did undergrad at George Fox University.
Okay.
In Newburgh.
Oh, nice.
And my junior and senior year there. And that was just one of the things you could do is be... on the college radio station, K-Fox.
K-Fox.
It was an AM, super low-powered AM.
What were you doing? Like,
I did programs director and something else. Maybe I did programs for 2 years. I don't remember. But it was like we all kind of just did the same thing anyway because it's college radio. Nobody
were you like
what doing.
Goofy drive time guy? Like, hey everybody, welcome to the show.
We did a show called so George Fox is a Christian university.
Yep,
and in the old school Christian music, there was this band called Carmen, and I couldn't tell you anything about them other than like, no bueno, right? This is not good.
No,
and neither my co-host or I liked rap at the time.
Oh no!
And so, the name of our show was something like something terrible, stupid, like the No Carmen, No Bad Rap Show, or something dumb like that. Like, really dumb. Like, really, really dumb. Ryan Chambers, if you hear this, give me a call and remind me the name of the show. That was my co-host. And we called our listeners viewers. It was so dumb.
Oh, my God.
And we had, like, no listeners.
Yeah. It must have been fun, though. How'd you get into that?
I might have gotten a credit for it.
Okay.
And my... edit out all the uhs.
Yeah. Not at all.
My, what do you call it when you choose your major? A major was major.
Yeah.
As you call it. My major was broadcast communications, media and broadcast communications.
Okay.
And that just happened to be one of the things you could do to get a credit. So I was like, all right, I'll do that.
It's pretty rad, though. You just go mess around with people. And
yeah, it was fun. I mean, we got to learn a lot of the software that they were using. Yeah. It's probably all different now because I'm an old man.
Yeah.
But it was fun. You know, we got to kind of choose our own music and do our own thing.
What years were you in college?
I graduated from there in 2002.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds...
I graduated high school like the year you were born, probably.
1987. It's 1987. Not quite that, right? It's funny you say 02, and I'm like, oh, that's not that long ago. And then I'm like, wait, no, that's 16 years ago.
Yeah.
That was a while. I was a freshman in high school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's weird because somebody says 10 years ago to me, and I still think about the 90s.
Yeah. No.
I'm like, 10 years ago wasn't the 90s.
For some reason, I do that too, where there's a movie where you're like, that movie was 1996, and you're like, what?
Like Toy Story.
Yeah.
Like 96.
Yeah. Did you always want to do broadcast journalism?
No, I didn't actually know what I wanted to do when I transferred into that school. So my choice of major came out of not having real direction and then what was on the menu.
Yeah.
And I kind of picked one because I didn't really excel at math. That major, I could do things like photography and graphic design and ceramics and get away with it.
You could just be arty and
so I did a lot of that and I played in college a lot.
Okay.
So and got credits for it.
Oh, nice.
I was like, oh, I'll do that.
You got to do all the fun things and get a degree.
Yeah.
Okay.
Give you a bunch of money, you let me play.
That's not bad. It's not a bad deal. You said you didn't really have much, I guess, direction at the time. Was that coming from high school? Was that coming from growing up? What was?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
It came from, you're going to make me like dig into my, my heart.
Wherever you're comfortable going, man, we'll go there.
There was never a thing that I really excelled at. And in fact, I'm a photographer now. Yep. You know that, but our listeners don't.
Yeah.
And there was a point, I think I may have been graduating 8th grade, and my parents had bought me a camera.
Yeah.
And like they had already bought the gift, but I hadn't given it to me yet. And I'm an 8th grader, so I say something stupid like, well, I don't really even want a camera because I wouldn't know. I said something dumb or whatever. And I'm sure it hurt my mom's feelings or whatever. But, and then they gave me a camera and then that was weird, but I took it and ended up having a blast with it. But like, the artful things, and I wouldn't call myself an artist now, but the artful things were kind of the only thing I could enjoy mm-hmm. and dig into. Mm-hmm. I wasn't really exceptionally talented at any of it, but way back then, I didn't have the concept that you could make money with it.
Sure.
That you could do any of that as a living. And obviously now it's completely my view on that has completely changed.
Yeah, I would hope so.
Yeah, I have friends that make ceramics for a living and I take pictures. That all kind of came out of just not having direction, mm-hmm. not being good at any one thing.
Yeah.
And being definitely also being bad at things.
Yeah.
Like, well, I'm not great at math or science.
Sure.
So I'm going to avoid that as a career path. Yeah.
And did you ever have the, you know, most, like most boys and a lot of girls, did you ever have the aspiration of like, oh, I want to be a professional athlete?
No.
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 No. Were you doing sports at all when you were young?
Yes, and I was terrible.
Yeah.
I did, and I was bad. And older, as I got older into high school, I discovered things like rollerblading and snowboarding and things that you could do.
The more artistic sports.
Yes, I guess. things you could do on your own.
Yeah.
Where you didn't have to have a coach or a team. And started doing those. Also never... I'm burping into your...
Yeah, you're fine.
...microphone. Also never really excelled at those, but had fun.
Yeah.
And I'm a runner now. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
They don't. And that's kind of probably also came out of wanting to be active and mm-hmm. have a sport, I guess, but not being geared or prepared for team situations.
Yeah. Team situations are tough. They're tough at work. They're tough in sports. They're tough everywhere.
Maybe I'm just not good in a team, so I'm freelance.
I mean, maybe it's not that you're not good. It's just like you have a preference style that makes you comfortable and you can roll with that.
Style.
You have like a certain style.
I like that.
I kind of like putting it that way a little better.
A freestyle.
I like that. So were growing up then, did you have parents encouraging you to do anything or sports wise or?
This could be a long story too.
I'm here for it.
My parents divorced when I was 3.
Okay.
So there's that dynamic mm-hmm. and I'll keep the long story short. Appreciate it. And so I lived with my mom mm-hmm. and saw my dad, but spent most of the time with my mom
mm-hmm.
and my stepfather. And they did encourage me to play whatever I was into doing. Like I played basketball for a while and was bad at it. And I did a season or two of track in junior high and was bad at it.
Yeah.
Like I think probably most kids are in junior high.
They're, sure.
They're bad at the things that they're doing. But, so they encouraged me to do it and they would take me to practice and I played soccer as a little kid. But it good and bad, it was never like, okay, you're doing this. Like, let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's do it 100% and let's do as much of it as we can. I was just kind of left to my own devices, I suppose.
Yeah.
Like, you want to do it? Okay, do it. Yeah, I'll drive you to practice if you need it.
Sure.
But so I had permission, but not support, mm-hmm. I think I mm-hmm. would say. What was your question?
No, that was it.
Okay.
That was great. You answered it. Okay. No, it's, you know, I was just thinking back, you know, you were talking about how they put a camera in your hand and if you wanted to do that and along the same lines, it seems like, you know, parents can like push us to do certain things mm-hmm. in a certain way, but they can also just be like, oh, go do what you want.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be a little like, okay, but then you're kind of left wandering.
Yeah. Which it can be a little confusing for sure.
Yeah.
Because you don't, as a kid, you almost need to be told everything.
You need direction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just me.
Yeah.
But I think until you're older, I mean, like you can't even physically, cognitively, you don't even have your, impulse control.
Right.
That's what I was going to say.
Right.
You might want to edit that part out.
No.
You don't even have a fully developed impulse control
right.
until you're in like your early 20s.
Yeah. I think for males, it's like 25.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
Yeah,
it's terrifying.
We're a ridiculous species.
We are.
Thing. We're a ridiculous thing.
Yeah.
We're monsters.
And so like we and especially back then, when the world was more free and less scary, and there was freedom to go play all day long with your little buddies in the ditches next to the cars, next to the roads, and go build tree forts and catch things on fire, and, you know, chase wild animals or whatever, you know, just be home for dinner. Yep. And if you can't, call me from wherever house you ended up at.
Yeah.
So the times were different, but it's still true today that, like, I feel like we just don't give enough guidance.
Sure.
And then kids get unsure of who they are.
Yeah.
What they are good at or want to do. And I don't know what I'm talking about. So
no, what I was asking of just about direction and guidance and where it comes from, especially you consider now how kids communicate with each other and there's not a lot of verbal, like people don't sit it down like this and just talk to each other.
Yeah. I know it's weird. Just like looking.
Yeah. But it's cool. It's like, it's great. I mean, that's one reason why I wanted to do this is just to sit down and talk with, it's like a great excuse to chat with people.
Right.
But now you look at kids and a lot of it's over text message or a lot of it's just in their home. And I don't know. There just doesn't seem like there's a lot of mentoring going on. There's not a lot of like, hey, you know, here's how I did it when I was growing up. Yeah. But let's see if that works for you or if not, great. But there's just not a lot of it going on. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I grew up in a kind of a similar situation as you did, except for my dad raised me. And he was super loving. He kind of acted as a mom and a dad. So super loving and everything like that, which was great. But in a similar way, it was, you know, yeah, that's fine. If you want to try that, go do that. Oh yeah, that's fine. If you want to try and do that, go do that. So I was kind of left to my own devices to figure out what I liked and what I didn't. And he would take me running and stuff like that, which was great. But, yeah, I mean, I think later it was kind of like, oh, I guess I had to figure all this stuff out for myself. So,
and I guess there's a certain amount, like obviously anything we say, there's an argument for,
sure,
and against, and there's a lot of value in letting your kids do different things and try different things and fail at different things.
Sure,
but I think there's a difference between, do whatever you want, I'll drive you to practice.
Yeah.
And, oh, you want to do this. Okay, let me come beside you and guide you.
Sure.
Because I actually know how to do that.
Yeah.
And even if I don't, I know what it takes to do a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So as your parent figure,
yeah,
mom or dad or aunt or whoever's raising, you know, whoever's job that is,
yeah,
for me to come alongside, for that person to come alongside and actually guide,
yeah,
is different than just being like, all right, do whatever you want.
Sure.
I'll drive you if you need a ride.
Sure. I guess it's too, it's like what are you supporting in saying do whatever you want? It's like, you're not saying go beat that kid up. That's fine with me. It's like, you know, I'll drive you to sports practice.
Yeah.
If that's what you want to do. I mean, there is some nuance there.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess I got that sort of healthy support. But, and you were kind of talking about a guy. Did you have like a male figure in your life at all? Like a father figure or father figures? Cause I know for me, like, for example, I took on all my my friends' moms as my mom. And like one of my grandmas, she was like my mom. So I like collected these mother figures over time.
Brad and all his moms.
Yep. That's right.
No, that's great. My dad was around.
Mm-hmm.
Not nearly as much as I think I needed, or wanted. And I had a stepfather who was around probably more than I wanted. You know, the whole, like, you're not my dad, you're not my mom thing. Like, there was no like bad stuff.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, you want your dad and you want your mom.
Yeah.
So I had males in my life. But my father was disconnected enough that he wasn't giving me what I needed.
Sure.
And my stepfather, he had his own two kids and, I had a younger brother.
Yeah.
So he had him. Mm-hmm. So he's got his own three kids and I'm, you know, my mom's kids. So
he was kind of detached from you. Like you were
He was there.
Yeah.
And he probably he was the one that taught me to drive.
Yeah.
And like he was involved.
Sure.
But I think there's just a point of like, either it was me saying, I'm not going to listen to you. I'm not going to let you be the father that I need.
Yeah.
Even if you're trying. Or him saying, like, I can only go this far.
Sure.
So I don't know. I haven't explored that yet.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, I had men in my life. And I always had an uncle that was around a lot, too, cool. That I looked up to.
Cool. It's always good. I mean, you know, just seeing the female side of that for me, where it was always good having those strong people around, even if it wasn't my mom. But definitely, like, as I grew older, even through high school and college, it's like you start to, things start to come up where it's like, oh, I didn't really know about this, or like I didn't have that female guide around all the time that probably would have helped in this situation. Like I would have learned that thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Have you experienced anything like that? Like where you're like, ooh, maybe that's where that's from. Like that's,
yeah, this is funny. The timing of this is really interesting. I'm actually in a men's group right now going through a curriculum called Mending the Soul.
Nice.
And I really didn't know anything about it when I got into it. I'm not going to try to really explain it, but it's biblically based, and it's based off of a book that, not the Bible, but some people wrote, and then they ended up doing like a study out of it. So if you're not into that, I don't recommend it, listeners. but if you can be okay with that, it's about, this is going to sound really harsh, but it's about, abuse and the abuse that you have, experienced in your life.
Yeah.
And it's about like capital A abuse.
Yeah.
But it breaks it down and teaches you, about all of the little A abuses, things like emotional abuse and abandonment and things that aren't necessarily like sexual abuse or physical abuse or the things that we think about straight away. So but my point in that is that we've all experienced abuses.
Yeah.
And, so I'm going through this study and I'm like learning about all these little things in my life from all of these little people.
It's like, what?
And I'm sitting here and you're like, I'm going to talk to you about your family. And I'm like, oh no.
Yeah. Yeah.
but yeah, to answer the question, like, yeah, I'm learning now, just now, just how many little things there have been that I've kind of missed out on and didn't get done right.
Yeah.
On that time around. Not that any of those people are wrong or bad.
Sure.
They just missed a moment or did a dumb thing.
Yeah.
That was a pretty simplified version of
No, that's great. It's really interesting. It's just amazing when you get like, I go to counseling on the regular because I think everybody should in some form. I love it. And when we start talking about some of these things with her, I'm just like, something will come out of my mouth and I'm like, oh yeah, that probably wasn't a good thing that happened to me there. Yeah. That's probably a problem that I've never really thought about.
Yeah.
And I'm sure some of that comes up, for you. But it had kind of made me think too, like I was always a really sensitive kid growing up. I'm still a pretty sensitive guy now.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these things would happen and I would just like, I mean, I would get really emotional growing up, but I didn't really think of them as abuses. And then later, once you just said that, I was like, oh yeah, those are all like, I was experiencing all those little abuses kind of growing up. And it's just kind of interesting to look back when you do that. Like you look back from point A and how you got here and you know what you've experienced, you're like, oh, that's all connected.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it can be overwhelming if you really dig in, if you keep your guard up,
and
you don't really give it all of it that it deserves, then you can skate through that's the info pretty well. But
one reason why those counseling appointments are only 50 minutes at a time, it's like, that's enough.
Yep.
We'll catch you next week. Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting though. So you said that you went to George Fox and this was biblical based. So how did you grow up going to church?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yes and no. So I lived with my mom and visited my dad. And when I would go visit my dad, he was involved in church. So I would go do church stuff with them on the weekends, or I'd go to their or I'd go to their churches, church camp on the summer. So that's where I got my church for most of my life.
Sure.
And my mom was okay with it. She was encouraging.
Oh, cool.
But she would like never go with me.
Yeah.
If I was not visiting my dad, and I would say like, "You want to go to church this weekend?" That wasn't something that we would do. But she was like, "Yeah, if you want to go, you can go. That's fine." So that's kind of what ended up happening. Is I made a really good friend through school, and his family was amazing. And I feel like I owe that family so much.
Yeah.
And just started kind of going to church with them, and then it just became part of my life.
Yeah. And that's kind of obviously given you kind of at least a base for guidance. Like a kind of a path, I guess.
Yeah, it was nice to have a friend and his whole family unit into say, it. "Try this."
Yeah.
And we will be there with you.
Yeah.
And we'll kind of tell you about it if you have questions, and we'll take you where you need to go, like drive you, which is something I wasn't getting from my mom, that guidance.
Yeah.
Or my dad even. It was like, "Oh, you're here this weekend, so we're going to church."
Yeah.
Like they went all the time, but you're coming to church with us this weekend. And so even from my dad, when I was going to church with my dad, I really wasn't still getting any of that. Mm-hmm. This is why we're doing this. This is what all of this
weird language
means.
Yeah. And it's just a thing you were doing.
It's a thing I was doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was fun.
Sure.
And a good time, but.
Yeah. I mean, I was, I grew up with my mom's mom was kind of like my mom. My grandma was kind of like my mom, and she always used to take us to church a lot. Went to Sunday school. I was even baptized when I was real young. Mm-hmm. Went to Young Life camp, did all that. And, it was fun at the time, but it's kind of the same thing where I didn't know what was going on. Was hanging out with my friends, and seemed to be, I wasn't getting in trouble, so it seemed like a good thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Later, I mean, for me, it just didn't carry over, for whatever reason, but, it was, it was just interesting to have, it's just a different thing to guide you, I guess, is what I'm kind of get at. And, I don't know. It just didn't carry over. So I'm wondering, like, too, what about it for you, at least, carried over into college? How did it guide you into college?
Faith,
yeah.
You mean?
Yeah.
So I guess using the terminology, I would have accepted Jesus sometime in junior high at a camp or something.
Sure.
One of those camp high moments. And but when you're that young, my experience and a lot that I've heard anyway is, you're that young, you don't really know what you're doing. It sounds good. It gets you out of hell. You're like, that's cool. I don't want to burn for eternity. So it's there, but it doesn't really stick. But I liked the environment, and I liked the people, and I liked the fun games that we got to play with our friends and the camp and the pizza and all that stuff. So it just kind of never, maybe I just wasn't willing to let go of free pizza.
Sure. I don't blame you.
to this day, I cannot let go of free pizza. So I just kind of stuck with it. And, as I just got older, nothing bad enough happened to make me not continue.
Yeah.
Like I never got burned by the church, which happens all the time. Rightfully so. I have a lot of problems with the church, by the way.
Sure. No.
Which we're not going into.
Safe space, man. Safe space here.
lots and lots of problems with the church.
Yeah.
And part of the faith is faith. I mean, you can't, if I knew everything about God and understood everything about the Bible, why would I need it? Why would I need faith? Why would I need a God? Why would I need to have this, the higher being? the creator, all of, you know, all of that stuff. Like, why would I need that if I could understand all of that?
Right.
So part of the faith itself is the faith is the mystery.
Sure.
The fact that it's all too big.
Sure.
And too, I don't want to say mysterious, but
yeah,
it's mysterious. It's weird. Like, it, not weird. Weird is kind of the wrong word too, but like,
no,
that kind of is a hook for me too, because I also kind of look at it like, if I'm wrong and I spend my whole life treating people like I believe it's true.
Yeah.
And I'm a kind person.
Yeah.
I try to be kind.
Sure.
And I lead a good, happy life, and the people around me are
no harm done,
are happy. Yeah. When I'm around, if I'm wrong, then I still lived a great life.
Yeah.
If I'm right, then
yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Know? So I kind of, I guess that's pretty basic way. And,
yeah.
But I just never really had, I have more reasons to leave the faith now.
Wow.
Than I feel like I ever have.
Wow.
And I think that's because my faith is being challenged so much by the bad behavior of the people that are claiming.
Sure, the co-opting.
The same Jesus.
Yeah.
They're like, we're voting in the name of Jesus.
And yeah.
I'm like, no, you're not.
No, you're not. You're not paying attention.
Not the Jesus I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that now more than anything has been what's made me want to separate myself from any of that.
Well, I think we were talking about why, a little bit why we're attracted to faith. And some of it to me too is what you said. Like, I'm attracted to faith because I'm willing to say I don't know what the hell is going on. Mm-hmm. And it's like faith in that reason, for that reason, is attractive. Like, mm-hmm. to some, it's Christianity, when you have this story of creation and gives you guides, you know, gives you rules to live by. It's like, yeah, great. I'm attracted to that because as a human, I don't know what the hell is going on. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I'm here. I don't know, you know, how this all started. And it seems like a lot of with the people you were just describing who are co-opting this message, they seem to really think they know. And it's kind of an interesting, mm-hmm. it's an interesting thing to, as a non like Christian, just to sit back and look at and see somebody like yourself being like, man, I don't know about, like, I have all the reason to leave now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And honestly, like, I wish more people knew that more people felt the way I feel.
Yeah.
Because
I don't think they do.
I don't think they do.
I've heard maybe two people say that. And
yeah.
One.
Well, my wife feels the same way.
Yeah,
so add her to your list. Not to throw you under the bus,
no.
Caitlin. Sorry. But if, I think you hit it. You said they seem to know, think they know.
Yeah.
And then that's the mightier, or what's the term for holier than thou?
Holier than thou thing.
And they're on a march to save every soul. And the whole, like, God hates fags thing, like, don't even get me started on that.
Yeah.
And because it's wrong.
Yeah. Because simply, it's wrong.
It's wrong. But the thing is they're the loudest people.
Yeah.
You know, so the loudest was the squeakiest wheel gets the grease, right?
Sure. They're causing a bunch of shit right now, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And it's... And for you, like, I'm wondering, like, I'm sitting here listening to this story, but along the way, how are you, like, balancing finding yourself? Because we also live in this society, right, that, like, has certain expectations on men.
Mm-hmm.
And so how are you kind of finding that voice, you know, your quote-unquote man voice along the way in kind of a very non-masculine world? In some respects, you know, I'm just, it's just a lot going on there. And I'm just, like, always curious how people find that groove.
Yeah, I guess there is a lot going on there. And I don't know that I've found it.
Yeah.
I think even just
according to society.
Well, and even personally,
okay.
Like I struggle as a photographer.
Sure.
I struggle with things like, what's my voice? What's my style? What does my portfolio look like? What should it look like? Those are all like, what's my clientele? Who should my clientele be? Who do I want my clientele to be? Those are things that I think about when trying to find myself as a photographer. Mm-hmm. But that's my job.
Sure.
I feel like there's those same things going on as a person, as a human. Who do I hang out with? Where do I spend my time? What do the fruits of my actions look like? Mm. I have a son. He's 4.
Yeah.
How does my son behave? Not like is he being good so that it looks good on me?
Sure.
But is he kind?
Yeah.
Is he thoughtful? I mean, I can only expect so much out of a 4-year-old. But does he say please and thank you?
Yeah.
And not in a forced way. Does he choose to say goodbye to grandma and grandpa when they leave the house?
Yeah.
Because we give him the option. Do you want to say goodbye to grandma and grandpa?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like, nope. Okay.
Okay.
We let him say no.
Yeah.
But that's part of like, that's reflective of who I am and who my wife is and who we are as parents. As a married person, I've got that mirror pointed back at me, teaching me who I am as a person too.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that are feedback loops in life that can hurt a lot, teach you a lot.
Well, some of those mirrors are colored in a way that aren't necessarily helpful to you.
Or true,
or true.
We believe a lot of lies.
Yeah, it's a warped mirror.
Yeah, it's yeah. Funhouse.
It's a
funhouse mirror out here, so look out, people. But so I don't know if I've ever really found who I am as a man. I don't know if you do. Mm. I don't know if... Because even this study that I mentioned a few minutes ago has brought new information.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, whoa, okay, so maybe that's why I'm doing this or not doing that. Or I got to make sure that I'm not doing this to my son.
Sure.
Or my wife. And all of that stuff informs what I do.
And then overall in society, we're definitely being informed right now. Like... the whole Me Too movement and stuff like that, where, I mean, that's some of it is, you know, what kind of prompted me to start this. It's just, I wanted to talk to other guys and see where their head is and see how they, it's like you were just saying, you know, I didn't even think about it. Maybe we don't come to ever fully know like who we are as men or what that means.
Well, and everything around us, is changing at breakneck speed.
Yeah.
I mean, the news cycle is 24 hours. Yeah.
How are you handling that change? Because, I mean, for me, I'm like, I often throughout the day, I find myself asking, I'm like, is this okay? Can I still say that? Like, is this, sometimes don't know what I can do anymore as a male.
Yeah, I've definitely come up against, like, environments. That sounds excusey, but being in a creative environment for my job, I'm often surrounded by a lot of crass people, a lot of very I want to say that. You might want to cut out that dead space.
I like it. I like it.
I want to say liberal, but I don't want to say liberal because it's too politically charged.
Sure.
But, and I feel like I'm pretty liberal.
Yeah.
But a lot of just verbally liberal people.
Social justice warrior.
Well, there's a lot of that.
Yeah.
There is a lot of that.
Yeah.
But as far as like watching your mouth nowadays.
Yeah.
I feel like I haven't, I don't want to sound, look at me, but I feel like haven't really had to watch my own mouth too much.
Right.
But I have been in environments where I'm around a lot of people that maybe wouldn't have made me quite as uncomfortable.
Sure.
A year ago.
Yeah.
But now I'm like, wow, that's terrible.
Yeah. You can't unsee things now.
Yeah. Or unsay things.
Unsay things. Yeah.
Hear things. Like, yep. And that's part of what the problem is everywhere is like, once it's out, it's out.
Yep.
And you did it or you said it or, you know, it happened. And now you have to take responsibility for it, but nobody wants to take responsibility for anything.
Sure. Well, there's consequences with responsibility, though. So why would I do that?
Yeah, why would I do that? My responsibility is his fault. He made me do it. She made me do it.
Yeah.
She dressed that way. No. It's on you to not.
Yeah,
and that brings me back to my son. Like,
yeah,
I have to teach him. It doesn't matter how she's dressed. It doesn't matter what, you know, part of her body you saw.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter. Like, you can't go there.
Yeah. And that's definitely something I want to ask about your son, because it was, I know I saw, you know, we're friends on Facebook, just like everyone else, 6 degrees of separation. But like, I saw you posted an article a while ago about how to raise sweet boys. Uh-huh. And I was really interested in reading that. And, I mean, so we just talked about you defining yourself as a man, and now you have a little boy. Mm-hmm. And so how do you raise a sweet boy, or how is it, even first, let's like, how has having a son changed you as a man?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I'm really fascinated by, you know, parenting and stuff. So,
having a kid, period, boy, girl, whatever. For me, I can only speak for me. It changed my perspective on probably almost everything.
Wow.
Because I can no longer, so you get married and now you have a spouse, and part of being married is you think about that person first. Mm. And about how what you're doing, is what I'm doing going to serve my wife, my spouse, my husband, whatever. But you pretty much don't have to worry about that person. Like, they're an adult.
Yeah.
They can drive themselves to work and home and be safe, and they're going to make good decisions and, not get hit by a truck or whatever, yeah. You know, those things like, but with a little one, you literally have to do everything. And even beyond everything, like the diapers and the feeding and like, even beyond that, they rely on you for everything, every little touch, every little word, every sound that they hear, like you can control that.
Yeah.
And it's simultaneously like terrifying.
It's a lot of responsibility.
And yeah, huge responsibility. But it's such a joy because you can, this is going to sound like weird, but, you can control all of the input and you can make that little person who you want it to be. And obviously giving room for who they are.
Sure.
Because I honestly believe that kids are going to be who they're going to be.
Yeah.
But we had him, and immediately I started crying at any commercial that a father is involved in. Like a proud father.
Yeah.
Show me a commercial with a proud father,
yeah,
and I'm a mess.
Yeah.
Like the dad in the commercial doesn't even have to be crying.
Yeah.
But like, oh, my kid just learned how to drive, and I'm just like, oh, yeah, I love you, Dad. I love that kid.
Yeah.
So they pull on your heartstrings in these delicate ways that, well, kids do a lot of things. They break your heart.
Yeah, sure. Piss you off.
Yeah. They show you, they reveal in you the things that you don't like about yourself.
Sure.
Because you don't want them doing it. So they do a lot of stuff like that. And how having him has changed me as a man, I don't really know, other than he's made me better.
Hmm.
I think I would say that, probably through a lot of little tiny things.
Sure.
Here and there.
Well, just, I mean, even when I mentioned him at the first, you're like, oh man, you lit up. And then, you know, there's just those little moments that seems to have softened some things maybe. you know, you're talking about watching a commercial and you see the dad come on and you cry, and it's probably made you, I don't know, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but maybe more mindful when you're interacting with him.
Totally.
Or anybody else, interacting with anybody else, maybe. Mm-hmm. So
he's got a lot of little buddies that are about the same age as him too. Mm. And all in our kind of like friend circle. And if I didn't have my son, I wouldn't know how to be
around
these other kids.
Yeah, well,
and there's like a bunch of them.
That's a good point.
And there's only a couple of them that are older than him. Mm. And one of them is like 2 weeks younger than my son. So they're like the same. And, I wouldn't know what to do. So I would probably be treating these other kids
kind of like awkwardly.
So
like,
all awkward and
these
like,
little things are in my way.
Why?
Yeah.
But now I guess I have a voice as a father. Like
sure.
I know how I want to raise my son up.
Yeah.
So that's how I'm going to be to these other kids.
Yeah. And which gets us to that article I thought was interesting, to do it sweetly.
Yeah.
Which I mean, it was kind of a, you know, like a Time article or whatever, but it just, even at the beginning of it where it was like, you know, the parent calling his little boy Sweet Pea.
Yeah.
Which I just thought was just kind of interesting, instead of hey little buddy or
yeah,
hey guy. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny cause I read that article when I posted it.
Yeah.
I don't remember it now.
Yeah.
But we call him Sweet Boy.
Oh, that's cool.
And, always have.
Yeah.
And my wife started that, excuse me, probably from the day he was born.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know if he is a sweet boy because we have told him that he is,
yeah.
But he really is a sweet little boy.
What? I think yes. Like there's a certain softness in that sweet boy that I think rubs off. And I'm sure when you even say it, it sounds a little softer.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, so one of my mother figures who I call Mama D, she calls me sweet boy. And I just realized it's like, yeah, I love that. I love that little term of endearment instead of, hey fella.
Yeah.
Or, hey guy.
Yeah.
You know, sweet boy. It's like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of like that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, no, it's like, it's confirming for you. That's funny. How else do you kind of, promote, you know, raise him, or what other methods do you use to make sure he's a sweet boy?
Well, we above all want him to be kind to people.
Yeah.
And to, accept people for who they are. Or just for the fact that they're another person, and just because they're another person, you should give them respect in the space they need, and you should be kind to them.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, or maybe unfortunately, I'm not sure. We haven't run into a lot of situations where he's said something
like outlandish.
Yeah. You know, tried to rub, color off of somebody none of that has really happened yet. But honestly, I don't know if it will.
Yeah.
Like I guess I can't be surprised if anything happens.
Sure. Cause
kids do crazy things all of the time.
And they repeat a lot of what they see.
And that's part of it too, is like my wife and I try to be kind.
Mm-hmm.
And, not only because we have a 4-year-old, and he gets to see a lot of that. And there's a lot of communication that happens as a parent that's not out loud.
Sure.
In good ways and bad ways. So we try to enforce, like he goes to school and we might say, I hope you have a great day. Don't forget to be kind.
Oh, cool.
Or something, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
Or we'll ask him afterwards, like, did you make a new friend?
Yeah.
And maybe he'll say, yeah, his name's Joel.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Is he kind? Or did you guys play kindly together? Something like that.
You're planting those little seeds of.
It's guidance.
Yeah.
Through
there
language.
It is. Yeah.
And, we are, when and if you become a parent, things will probably be different. The languages will be different. But right now there's a movement. I don't know if I should call it a movement or not, but there's a school of thought, about gentle parenting.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically, I'm going to butcher this because everything I know about it, I learned from my wife. She's the one that researches it.
Oh, so it's her fault.
It's her fault. It's her fault.
Sorry,
yeah.
Kidding.
It's basically like, don't be punitive. Like, don't, there's no timeouts.
Sure.
Come down to your child's level and treat them like a human. It's a lot about understanding that, like, you don't have to have your master's in child development.
Yeah.
But if you can just give them the credit, the kids the credit that they're 4 years old and they don't have that impulse control and they can't make decisions and they have emotions that are overwhelming. Like, if you or I get a little bit sad, we could be like, oh man, I'm kind of bummed.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I'm going to go outside and get some fresh air.
And some of that is knowing how to alleviate that pain, knowing that the pain is going to leave, that feeling is going to leave us. We have like this understanding of that. They don't.
And they have none of that.
Yeah.
So they get sad.
Sure.
Even just a little bit.
Despair.
And yeah, it's like we're all in hell now.
Yeah. 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 It's like, no, dude, you just spilled your juice.
Yeah.
It's like, it's all good.
Yeah, it's fine. We can clean it up. Yeah. But. In fact, that happened, not that, but just the other day, he was helping give me his dishes through our pass-through window in the kitchen. And, he's pretty good at it. He usually we have like a bench seat next to the table and he basically just has to turn around and put it in the pass-through window and we can take it right at the sink. But, he was walking this plate of ketchup and little cut up hot dogs and he put it on his head.
Is that your plate?
It was my plate, yeah. Yeah, I was eating macaroni and cheese and hot dogs. I do love those hot dogs.
Oh, God.
But he put it on his head, and he was trying to balance it on his head. I didn't see it. All I heard was the plate fall, and he goes, uh-oh. And, like, okay, so now on our bench seat, our upholstered bench seat,
oh, good,
is a big splatter of ketchup and a bunch of, like, greasy hot dogs.
Yeah.
So I have a choice to make. I can freak out and be like, what were you doing putting that on your head?
Yeah.
Like, you can't balance plates of hot dogs on your head. You're four.
The hell are you thinking?
What the hell is wrong with you? Or I could go over and be like, oops.
Yeah.
Accidents happen.
Oh, no big deal.
Yeah. You know what? I'll grab a towel. We'll clean it up. And can you pick up the hot dogs off the floor?
Yeah.
Sure, Dad. Here you go. And he picks them up and puts them on the bench seat that I'm cleaning. So then I have to pick those up. And
he tried hard,
but you know, I wasn't punitive.
Yeah.
He didn't get in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine if you spilled hot dogs and I was like, Brad, what's wrong with you?
Yeah. I'd sink into a chair.
Yeah. But like, clean up your hot dogs.
Yeah.
And you know, get your act together. But you can't, people do that to their kids all the time. And it's,
did it take you practice?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, because I can see where at first you would just, most people do freak out.
Yeah.
I've seen it.
Yeah, I've done it.
Yeah.
It's easy to do. I can't think of an example right now, but he's done things and I've never like yelled at him.
Yeah.
Like, unless I needed him to get away from something like hot.
Sure. Oh, like a dangerous situation.
Yeah, I've had to yell at him to stop reaching
to scare
something.
Him.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm just far enough away and I can't get to him.
Yeah.
And so
that makes
sense. Kind of have to.
Yeah.
But he's so tender and he's so sweet that he gets so terrified and starts. I was like that as a child. My mom said, all I had to do was look at you cross-eyed and you would stop and you would start crying.
Do you have a bit of that guilt thing?
No, I don't know if it's.
Not like a Christian guilt, but like I just. For me, I always wanted to make sure I wasn't doing something to hurt somebody else.
Oh, yeah.
So if somebody looked at me cross-eyed, I'm like, I did something wrong. Yeah. What did I do wrong? It's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. But you're a sweet boy.
I'm a sweet boy.
Yeah.
I try to be. Not always fail sometimes, but.
We all do.
Yeah.
We all do.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's been an intentional process for us and my wife, too, where all of the easy things to do aren't necessarily the good things to do.
Sure.
What's that song, the hardest thing and the right thing are the same. Doing it the right way is oftentimes way more painful.
Yeah.
For the person doing it.
Yeah.
Than doing it the easy way.
A lot of it sometimes too is sometimes the right way is holding back a human emotion that you just want to let out,
mm-hmm.
make you feel better, uh-huh. but it won't help the other person on That's the right. other end of it.
Yeah. Sometimes the right thing is doing nothing at all.
Doing nothing and just being like, mm-hmm. you know, people can't see my face, but you can see my face.
I can see your face.
Like, holy hell. it's kind of funny. You were talking a little bit about having your son help you clean stuff up. And one of the things I remember about my dad raising me is that we always did everything in a team. Mm-hmm. It was him, my brother, and I in the same house. Everything we did was all about the team. He always needed help. He was on the team. I'm on the team. We're all on the team. So it's like, hey, help me do the dishes. Help me do the dishes. We'll get it done faster. Let's mm-hmm. see how fast we can do it. And then we can go watch a movie. And so that, I mean, I just remember that so much. Like that was so great because we always did something together.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I don't know, that really, I think it has carried over to me in some ways. I'm just so glad he was there and a part mm-hmm. of me. I was like, he empowered me to be a little guy, like a little man, quote mm-hmm. unquote, but sweetly.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. Yeah. I mean, a lot of these things you do, it's probably like, you know, you're intentionally doing all these things to raise a sweet boy. He's 4 years old and he may not realize it until he's like 30.
If ever.
Yeah. If ever. And so that's kind of like a selfless thing as a parent too, where you're like, well, I don't really get credit for this, but kind of what I'm going to have to do.
Yeah, probably. And that makes me think about my poor parents.
Yeah.
Like what were they doing right?
Sure.
In silence. Yeah. That they're never going to get credit for. Mm. But hey, mom and dad, thanks.
Thanks. Love you. You know, yeah, I mean, I've learned a lot of things from the torturing moments too.
Mm-hmm.
So even then they're always teaching moments.
Yep.
But so it's kind of interesting what all the things you just described to me, like I'm thinking, isn't that those duties as a father and, you know, as a husband, that's what a man is, right? Isn't that what it should be?
I don't know. I guess. No, let me back up. You don't have to cut that out, but let me start over again. That's all part of it. My reaction, I think, was based on, I don't think that I always do a very good job.
Sure. No, but I understand that reaction because, like, we're always questioning ourselves mm-hmm. and we don't know if we're being, like, if this is what a man is supposed to do. Mm-hmm. But I think as that definition starts to change a little bit and shift, I think people like you who are doing these things, like, that's what that should be a model of what, to me at least, what a man should be doing.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. I mean, it's just because otherwise, I mean, like a male, sometimes you think of, you know, like probably my grandfather. He's not sitting here talking like this. He's not calling my dad sweet boy growing up.
Right.
And that's just a thing of the time. Mm-hmm. Right. But a lot of what man is defined as is from that time.
Yeah.
It's from like John Wayne,
mm-hmm.
this gruff, like kind of testosterone filled meat puppet thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it can be hard. Like it's, you know, it's kind of sensitive guys to fit in that mold.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder like if this, are you challenged by that sort of thing?
Not to the extent that I feel like I've really realized it.
Yeah.
But probably.
Sure.
I'm not a strong guy. Mm. I mean, I'm not like, we're a couple skinny guys.
Right with you.
so I've never, you know, I've never been great at sports.
Yeah.
Kind of like we were talking about earlier. I don't have a muscle car.
Sure.
I would definitely not fit into that John Wayne, you know, man's man.
Yeah.
I'm not a cowboy. I don't hunt. I don't fish.
Yeah.
I go to the grocery store.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
And that probably has affected how I perceive my worth as a man.
Sure.
If that was, I don't really
know. No, it definitely has for me. I mean, you talk about like being a skinny, like runner, like, yeah, there's like body image issues there that like not a lot of men like to talk about, but it's like, yeah, sometimes I'm like I struggle with that a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's part of, but like, I wouldn't stop running.
Right.
I'm not going to like just try to throw on 100 pounds of fat. Like, but it's,
or even like muscle,
or even muscle, and really like,
look at The Bachelor.
And yeah.
They're all, the dudes are always like super cut,
square jaw.
I want to see a guy that looks like me on The Bachelor.
I know, right?
That's what I want.
I like
The Bachelorette, or whichever one we're in.
I think we can get that started.
Yeah, just maybe. Average.
Wasn't there a show like that, like Average Joe or something? Like just some average, just a bunch of like average dudes like, hey, how you doing?
That would be good.
I like it.
I'm going to Google it and find out.
There's got to be a place for us somewhere.
Yeah, well, I don't want to be on the
No,
show.
Well, you're married, have a kid. Just to be clear, he is happily married.
I'm not auditioning Average Joe.
But he'll support my getting on that show.
That's right. Yes, I will.
Yeah, great. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
No, it is a bit of a struggle that's not talked about, though, I think, a little bit, not enough.
Well, and I think a lot of that, like, same kind of our images of our self-images coming from our past is the same for women.
Sure.
And how we treat women as men.
Oh,
all comes from a lot of that. And the, like Mad Men, think about Mad Men.
Just straight smacking women in some of those.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
And you know, if you want to talk about what it looks like to be a man now.
Yeah.
Look at how you're treating the women around you.
Sure.
And if you're still treating the women around you now, like you would have in Mad Men, then you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Man, some of those, I mean, like we were talking about my grandfather, and you look back at some of those old movies and stuff. And like, I can't remember. I just heard this. I can't remember who it was, but there was an actor in a movie who actually just like slapped the actress hard when she wasn't expecting it.
During filming?
I mean, it's in the movie. It's in the movie.
Method acting.
That was his thing, but she was like also like at the time, in that time era, she was just like kind of accepting of it. Like, oh, you just smacked me. I guess that's part of the deal.
I guess.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
But
that would never fly now.
Oh, God. Well, obviously.
Clearly.
Clearly. I mean, even recently, allegedly, Quentin Tarantino got in trouble for doing some of that method acting with Uma Thurman.
I saw some of that coming up. Yeah. I didn't read any of it.
Yeah, in the movie, I guess it was, he liked, allegedly, to do a lot of the abuse.
Ah.
Which was weird. But I mean, still,
we already knew he was a weird dude. So,
yeah, I mean, his movies are good, but like, they're out there.
Yeah,
they're out there. Those are total guy movies. Speaking of guy things,
yeah,
those are I always used to go see those movies in theater with my dad.
Yeah,
yeah, there was always that one thing that we always went and saw, those the Bond movies.
Yeah,
another guy. Speaking of, just have you gone back and watched any of those movies lately?
I don't think I've seen a James Bond movie for.
Oh man, go back and watch like old Sean Connery, James Bond.
So bad.
Well, you know, I still kind of like the movies, but you start looking at like how he's treating the women and how you're just like, holy shit, like this isn't going to fly.
Yeah.
Oh man. The other thing I was curious about, it's not really a great way to segue away from that, but
yeah, that's okay.
Yeah. is that I kind of, when we first met, well, how we first met is what made me think of this, is you just messaged me on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
and you message other people on LinkedIn in the company.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I answered because I try to answer every single email and everything I get just as a, I don't know why, just like to respect people's time and
yeah.
whatever. But what I thought later on too is he seems to be really an ambitious guy. And I'm wondering, like, kind of wondering about ambition and how men treat ambition versus how women treat it. Or even a man that's seen as ambitious and a woman that seems ambitious. The difference there. I mean, for you, it just seemed like, you know, you have your own photography business.
Mm-hmm.
And so you kind of have to be like a go-getter and mm-hmm. like, you know, quote unquote, go-getter and ambitious in a way. But there is a difference in our society between mm-hmm. those two.
Yeah, because what's an ambitious guy? He's going to be successful.
Successful.
That's what a man's supposed to do. But what's yeah. an ambitious woman? She's a bitch.
Yeah.
She's controlling.
Yeah.
She's all these terrible things.
Yeah.
And that men don't want to deal with.
And to be clear, like, I'm not calling you out on that. Like, I think you did it in a very healthy way, which I liked, which is why we're sitting here, you know? But it did make me think about those differences, which that one never makes sense to me. How the woman is a bitch, but the guy is like, oh, successful guy.
Yeah, it's a weird thing too, because then they also say, they being everybody,
yeah.
they also say behind every successful man is a woman, right? A more
yeah.
successful woman or a successful woman or whatever it is, implying that no man can be successful unless he has the support from the women around him, his wife, his...
Yeah.
You know, and now maybe it should be a successful life partner,
sure.
as the term goes. But
yeah.
The point is, like, I'm never going to be successful unless I have support from my wife, from my family. So it's weird that societal norm is if she's ambitious, she's a bitch, but I can't do it without her.
Yeah.
Can't live with them, can't live without them.
Sure. Yeah.
Stupid, but
yeah.
It's funny that's to back up a little bit. Yeah. I did kind of, shotgun blast
yeah.
everybody at On. Can I say at On?
Sure.
Whatever you want. I don't see myself as an ambitious person.
Yeah.
But I, have been identifying the clients that I want.
Sure.
And going after them. So in that sense, I was being ambitious.
Sure.
But in an overall sense of like who I am as a person, I don't feel like ambition is a very good term
is that
to describe me.
Yeah, no. Is that something you've thought about before? Like, am I ambitious? Like, am I getting this hard enough? Or am I hustling hard enough? Is that something?
I think about it all the time, yeah. yeah. And it's a skill. I think there are a lot of people that maybe are just born to move fast and yeah. to hustle hard.
Yeah.
But that's also being supported and guided in a family structure that sure. values that. My family structure was very loose. It was very like that whole, what do you want to do? Do whatever you want, be home by dinner kind of thing. And I became a very reactive person versus proactive really, where I would just kind of deal with whatever as things happened.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't even have to be like a thing happening, but like, oh, it's dinner, I guess I'll eat dinner. It's morning, I guess I'll wake up. So I have felt through my life more like that than an ambitious go-getter,
mm-hmm.
self-made man.
Sure.
But when you're talking about being in the creative industry as a freelancer, it's like you don't have a choice.
Yeah.
You either figure out a way to sell yourself, or at least pretend to believe in yourself and tell people that you believe in yourself, or you're not going to eat.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of months.
A little bit of fear in there then.
yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of months where we don't eat.
Yeah.
And thankfully my wife has a straight job.
Yeah.
And we're fine.
Sure.
You know, we're not, I'm not sleeping in my car.
Yeah. I'm not going to see you on Burnside running in the morning, am I?
No, I don't think so. I hope not.
Okay, I have a futon just in case.
But yeah, so I wouldn't say that I'm actually an ambitious person, but it's good to know that it came off that way.
Yeah, no, it sincerely did. I was thinking a little bit about talking with you. I'm like, oh, you know, pretty ambitious guy. And it just got my head spinning about ambition too, mm-hmm. because, you know, and society for men does, like, that's a star for us.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he's ambitious.
Check.
You know,
check that box.
And I kind of struggle with that same thing where, I mean, what is my ambition? What does ambition mean to me? Or what does my ambition look like? Sometimes I don't feel ambitious at all. Like, mm-hmm. I don't feel, and maybe wrongly so, I start to equate it to, like, motivated. And sometimes I just don't feel motivated.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I'd just rather go do this other thing and hang out and read a book, or, you know what I mean? And I don't, you know, that kind of, I guess that affects me a little bit, because you don't know what to do. I don't know what it looks like, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like that's probably a pretty normal thing. Like, we wax and wane through our life and pinball all over the place. And sometimes we're on fire.
Yeah.
And sometimes we're like waiting
sure.
for survival. If either of those made any sense.
Yeah. But like, no.
I think it's normal to feel like, you know, I'm killing it, or I have no idea what I'm doing.
Sure. Oh, every day?
Every day. I feel like I have no idea what I'm
doing.
There are some days where, because I do a lot of my work out of like a whatever coffee shop.
Sure.
I'm close to, because I don't have a studio and I'm freelance. So I'll just kind of go where I can. And there's some days where I will sit there for an hour and like be totally stressed out.
Mm.
Because I don't know what I'm doing. And like, I literally don't know what I'm doing. Not in general. Like, I've got my laptop open, a cup of coffee,
yeah.
and my fingers are on the keyboard, and I'm like, I've got all my tabs open, LinkedIn, my email, like, and I'm like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
I don't know what the literal next step is.
Yeah.
And I don't feel ambitious at all when I'm sitting there doing that. I don't feel like I have motivation or direction. I feel confused.
Yeah.
I'm probably down on myself because I haven't had a real job for, you know, I haven't shot a real job for so many days or whatever. And, but there's other days where it's like, I know exactly what I'm doing, and I've got these people to email. I've got to hit Brad up on LinkedIn.
Feels good.
I've got to hit everybody I know at, anywhere.
Yeah.
And you know, I got a phone call, I got this, and then you go and do it and you're like, wow, I was ambitious today.
Yeah. You're pumped.
You know,
what does the, so when you get in those moments of like, I don't know what I'm literally don't know what I'm doing, which I call 1 PM. what does the overcorrection look like for you? Because I know for me, like, it's like periods of no ambition to like going way too hard. And then it's like, oh, we're a little overly ambitious there. What does that look like for you?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of wish I had that overcorrection.
Yeah.
I think for me, it's more of like a slow burn where it's like, okay, just make a decision and do one thing.
Mm.
Look at your list. Doesn't even have to be the top thing. Just pick a thing. If one of those things is email Brad.
Yeah.
Hey, Brad, honest, doing a thing. Do you need photography?
Yeah.
How many emails like that have you gotten from me?
A couple. That's great. No, that's
right.
Yeah.
And then once I do one thing, then maybe I could do another thing.
Yeah.
And then maybe a third thing. And then hopefully by the end of the day, I don't feel like it was a complete waste.
Yeah.
I haven't had many of those days. I really don't feel like I've come home from work and been like, I did nothing.
That's good.
I've totally wasted my whole day.
That's good.
Which is really good because
to not feel like you've wasted a day.
Yeah,
that's great. Even when, that should be the goal. It should be. Yeah. Because I mean, for me, sometimes it's like, oh yeah, I'll take on like 3 new projects. I have a bunch of ideas. Let's add a bunch of shit to it because I don't have anything to do. And then you get into it and you're like, oh no,
yeah,
what did I get into? And you're way in over your head.
Right. And then you get overwhelmed and you don't know where to start.
Yep. But
so you don't.
Your slow burn method, I've started to adopt that a little bit more. And one of the things I heard recently that was really helpful, and that it sounds so simple, but it's as a humans, it's like it's hard to practice. But if there's something like during your workday, if you can do something in 1 minute or less, just do it right there. If it comes into your mind and you can do it in 1 minute less, just do it.
Right.
Don't put that off.
Right.
Do that one thing. And even over like the last 2 weeks, I've been trying to like mindfully do that a lot more. And I get home and I feel so much better. Like I accomplished something.
Right.
And it could have just been an email back to Chris saying, hey, Chris, nothing yet for you, but we'll definitely reach out.
Mm-hmm.
Just like a 1 minute thing.
Right.
And it kind of helps temper that ambition flame a little bit, you know?
No, I'm going to try that.
Just, yeah, give it a try and see what.
What time is it?
Yeah, what time you got here?
I'm good.
You good?
You want to open that?
Yeah. Get a little beer ski going.
Oh, it's right there. We don't even have to move.
No, we don't. No. No. Got this all set up here, sir.
Brad's going to open a beer.
There will be no moving.
It's 4:45. He's got glasses ready to go.
In Portland typical fashion, what am I pouring these into?
Ball jar. Well, they're Kerr jars.
Here, you can take that one. Got a little foamy.
Pickling jars.
Did you
smells good.
Did you drink it all growing up?
No. Part of my growing up is that I was a pretty good kid. I did some crazy
things.
Cheers,
buddy.
Cheers, bro. Yeah.
Ooh, that is good.
Oh. That's really good. This should
Rogue
be a beer
ales.
Show now. Yeah.
Oof.
I told you that one was good.
That one was good. It tastes like a candy bar. Mm-hmm. For anybody who wants to try this, we're trying the Hazelnutty Choctabulous Candy Bar in a Bottle by Rogue Ales. Well, shout out to Rogue. That's free. That's free for you, Rogue.
That's right. If you're a label person, it looks like a waffle and a hazelnut. On the label.
Delicious.
In a disco. So go for that one.
So not drinking growing up.
Yeah. So I was a pretty good kid.
Yeah.
Did a few crazy things, but never like broke the law.
Yeah.
But no matter what I was doing, I never got caught.
Mm.
So I never really had any of that. Like I got busted so hard kind of stuff. And even if I did, I'm not sure what my mom would have done. She was pretty hands-off and trusting. So things like drinking and smoking and it was just not a thing.
Yeah.
Like I grew up in a smoking household. So I always pretty much knew I didn't want to have anything to do with that. But maybe it was cause I was, a Christian and like, you're not supposed to drink until you're 21.
Sure.
I never looked at beer and was like, oh, that's evil.
Yeah. Just wasn't.
It just wasn't. Yeah. And even when I turned 21, I was enrolled at George Fox. Is that right? Am I going to tell this story right?
It's your life, dude. Just tell it confidently and I'll believe you.
No. I guess I don't remember now. What I was going to say, true or not, was that when you're enrolled in George Fox, you signed the thing that says, I'm not gonna drink, smoke, have sex, watch rated R movies, whatever.
No, literally rated R movies though?
Yeah, I literally, that's one of the things. I don't know if it's on there anymore, but I actually got busted by one of my roommates because I had the Blues Brothers VHS.
I mean, come on.
In our thing. And he's like, this is a rated R movie. And he stuck it in my drawer.
Oh.
So like nobody would see it if they came over. I was like, yeah, whatever.
I'm still gonna watch it. Yeah.
But no, I didn't drink. I wasn't gonna drink. Mm. But I do remember the first time I did, we were camping and I got pretty drunk. It was pretty bad. I threw up on my buddy's tent.
Well, of course you did.
It was horrible.
Yeah.
I don't drink cider to this day.
Oh, I bet.
Because of that.
I've had that reaction where you drink that one thing that made you just Hefeweizen.
Yeah. Half, huh?
Half. Woodmere Hefeweizen.
It's a bummer. That's a good beer.
Community college. You know, I lived with two other dudes, and it was a Wednesday. And we just
Of course.
Well, why not? It's Wednesday. But one of my buddies that lived with us, he was just kind of a goofy dude, but I loved him. Loved him. And he got all excited when we were, he might have been high at the time, but he got all excited one time we were watching TV and like this commercial for a chocolate fountain came on. He's like, dude, look at that. So my buddy went out and bought it for him. And then so on this Wednesday night, we unveiled it and he's like, oh, he got really excited. And he went, he's like, dude, I'll go buy beers and we'll drink some beers tonight and eat out of the chocolate fountain. And we're like, yeah, community college. We're like, well, yeah, whatever. Yeah, sounds great. Wednesday, just roommates drinking. I'm like, oh, get me some Hefeweizen. So he comes back with, a big one, a bomber, and then he comes back with a six pack for me, and I drank it all.
Oh my god!
On a Wednesday.
Wow.
I was eating out of a chocolate fountain.
I see where this is going.
And I don't know if you've ever seen one of those, but it's, you like mix it with wax and you till it flows, and then of course we're taking like gummy like Teddy Grahams and just everything in the house, popcorn, and just dipping it in there, drinking, eating this. Worst night of my life. Absolute worst night of my life.
That sounds awesome.
And this is coming from a guy similar to you. Growing up, didn't drink. My mom was alcoholic. Grandfather was an alcoholic. And it was always one of those things that I saw it. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, no, not for me.
Yeah.
And just had never drank until I got to like, until I was like 18 or so. Never really like, I drank, like I had drinks of things growing up, but never really sat down and had more than two beers until I was 18 or so.
Yeah.
So some of the, you know, same thing where that first time it's like, oh, that's the last time.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, no, it won't be the last time.
Oh, no, no. Yeah. You think it will be. However, after drink two, you quickly forget that.
Forget. Yeah.
But it was interesting because my dad, I mean, so you see two Rogue bottles here because I love Rogue. And my dad loved it growing up. So even when I was like 14 or 15, he'd like let me take a sip of beer.
Yeah.
But it made me feel really like, oh, man, I'm a big guy taking drinking this beer.
With my dad.
Yeah, with my dad. Mm-hmm. And so that was a part of that, another connecting thing there. But it's funny how I think about this a lot too. I don't drink much. If, you know, maybe if I have a drink, like I'll have a drink.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine. But too, some of that, well, men drink.
Yeah.
Thing comes into my head.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'm like, oh, I guess I'm just kind of, makes me feel other, you know?
Yeah.
I don't, did you ever experience any of that?
Not, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I understand that, but I don't feel like I ever did really experience it personally.
Yeah.
I didn't like hang out with a lot of people that were just drinking all the time.
Yeah.
And,
oh dude, I grew up on the Oregon coast.
Well, so then you did.
There's a lot of drinking going on.
Yeah. I never really thought about that as an adult. Men drink whiskey.
Yeah.
And that's a thing now. You and I both run a lot, and you can't drink a lot and get much out of your running.
No.
So if you need an excuse, you know, there's a built-in excuse, but, and not to say that there's not like drinking involved, like, beer is a big part of running also.
Sure.
Like you go on a group run and then afterwards you rehydrate with some beer and it's delicious.
Yeah.
You hang with your friends.
It's a community thing. Like we cracked a beer open. And
We got a beer right now and I'm training for a 40 mile. Yeah. So it's, they're not exclusive, but it's definitely not, you can't party and treat your body poorly and expect to get anything out of
running. Yeah. And that's an interesting thing too, where, you know, come out and party with the guys. It's like, well,
okay, no, I've got a 19 miler in the morning.
Yeah, I'm going for a run tomorrow morning, and it's like, okay, so
yeah.
And even that thing you said, like men drink whiskey, and sometimes I'll go out. Mostly when I go out to dinner, it's like, what's your house red wine? People are kind of like, really? I'm like, yeah, I like wine.
Yeah,
but
imagine if you were like rosé. Yeah,
do you have a rosé?
Yeah. Anything bubbly?
I mean, even for me, no.
No, but it's easy to go there.
Yeah.
Like, what? Martini?
Yeah.
Like, what?
Lemon drop?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, are delicious.
Oh, they're delicious. We're not going to lie to anybody here. They are delicious. But I wouldn't be caught ordering one.
Right.
It's interesting that when I lived in Paris, that's a whole different ball game.
I'm sure.
Red wine? We drink it at lunch at work.
Oh.
So, I mean, that was great, but there was no, like... I mean, I don't get it much here with my friend group or at work where it's like, oh, you're drinking red wine? Look at this guy, you know? But, like, there especially, it's just, like, it's a whole different dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
Even one of my landlord was a lady, the couple was in their 50s, let's say, around there. And even their dynamic was observably different than it is here with a lot of married couples. She was like the leader of that house and like more vocal and more just like running shit.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, and I don't know if that's common there, but it was just an observation I made when I was thinking about all this, we're doing here. And it was like, oh, that's interesting.
You remember that made me think of, my big fat Greek wedding.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah. I haven't seen it in a long time.
Me neither. But one thing that stuck with me when I did see that was, it must be the mom that's saying this of the family, whatever the family is, where, she must be having a conversation with the daughter or something, but she said, he's the head of the house, but I'm the neck.
Ooh.
And I thought that was kind of funny, but like, I don't have a lot of experience with like international living and knowing families like you had the chance to, but like that speaks to the differences here. Like here,
sure,
men wouldn't, this is general, but men wouldn't be caught dead being like exposed as whipped.
Yeah.
Like nobody wants to be whipped, right?
Yeah. Right.
Like nobody likes that. I don't know.
Do you ever, I'm curious because I have this thing. I don't really have anybody to talk to this about, but like I've always had this desire, not a desire, but a thought that I would really like being a stay at home dad.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't like just run out and tell everybody that.
You just did.
I just did.
You can still edit.
But I'm only sitting here with you and this isn't live.
True.
Do you ever get that feeling like you could embrace that?
Yeah, that's actually been on the table for our family. Like I said earlier, my wife has a straight job, and she does a lot. She works a lot, and I'm at home with our son a lot. And sometimes it could be maybe easier for us for me to just call it. Just be like, I'm out of the freelance game. I'm just going to be a stay-at-home dad. If work happens to trickle in, then maybe I'll take it.
Yep.
But, it's definitely been something we talked about. And I think before I had a kid, I don't think I ever would have entertained the idea. But now that I have a kid and I know my kid and I love my kid.
Hell yeah. You want to stay home and play with
him. Yeah, it actually doesn't sound that bad of a gig. Especially since he's in preschool now, so we have a little bit of reprieve a couple of times a week where, you know, I could do my own thing or whatever. But
before that, like you were
saying. Before that, yeah, I don't think I would have.
Was that a self, do you think that was a self-identity thing or just like, I don't want to stay at home all day or what, you know?
I think it was more of a, I have no idea what I'm talking about kind of a thing. Okay. Because even before I had him, things as simple as like, just the parenting stuff that we were talking about earlier, like probably 5 years ago, I would have said, yeah, my kid's going to clean up the ketchup on the thing and he's going to clean up every little piece of hot dog.
Yeah.
And he'll apologize and he'll have a timeout. And like I would have probably have been that dad.
Yeah.
But instead I'm not now.
Yeah.
Thank God. Actually, you know, I'm glad I'm not the person that I think I might have been. But yeah, I think it would have been probably would have come from some kind of masculinity struggle, issue, confusion. thing.
Yeah, that is it's a tricky one, and some of it goes back into that ambition thing too.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, you're not ambitious, you're just sitting at home.
Yeah.
What are you? What kind of man are you?
Yeah, well, I probably work harder than you do.
Yeah, I probably work harder than you do raising a child at home.
Yeah, that's one of the things about stay-at-home moms. Like,
oh,
I hate it when people are like, oh, so she just stays at home, or oh, you're just a stay-at-home mom. Not just, like, especially multiple kids.
My sister,
mm-hmm.
two kids. You know, honestly, I'm sorry, Nikki. I don't know how old the boy is, like 4, 5, so you know. And then she's got like the daughter's almost 1.
Mm-hmm.
She's a stay-at-home mom. And I tell her all the time how much I admire her, because holy crap.
Yeah.
Like, so sometimes she'll send me social media is great for some reasons. I mostly don't like it. But sometimes she'll just send me videos just to me, and like one of them is like her kid standing on top of the back of the couch, like naked, just jumping off of it. And she's just like, oh God,
yeah.
You know, just letting him do it. But yep. It's just like, I'm just, as the other one is starting to walk and run away, I'm just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It takes a lot.
It probably gets your heart rate up a little bit.
Like, it does mine. Oh my gosh. It's like, do I want kids? It's like, but it, no, I mean, it makes me proud of her, but it also makes me just respect how hard she must work.
Yeah.
And maybe I don't want to be a stay-at-home dad. Like, sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah, your job might be easier.
Yeah, my job, my yeah, traveling all over the country and all over the world might be easier.
Might be a little easier than being a stay-at-home dad.
No, there's different, you know, there's different phases in life that we all want different things. Like, I've done a lot of traveling, and it's all great, and I'll probably do more, but yeah.
Yeah, who knows, man? Maybe you have a kid, and you're like, this is it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm done.
Done.
Going to Germany or wherever.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to.
I'd embrace that.
Stay at home.
Whatever is whatever. If there's something so great to keep me from wanting to travel to Europe, it's
then you'll take it.
Yeah, then I'll take it.
Yeah.
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 So one of the things I want to get into, not get into, but to the just two questions I want to cover from our women listeners. This little segment called what women think.
We got the wrong guy.
Or what women wonder. We're going to make sure we get that right. What women wonder. So I've procured some questions from women in my life that they want to hear men talk about or answer these questions. So one of them is why do men have such a hard time sharing their feelings? And kind of read that, and I'm just like, do we? Sometimes, but sometimes I feel like it's like when I answer a question to a female counterpart, I mean what I said, but they're like, is that what you really meant? It's like, well, yeah, I did. That's how I feel.
But do you really know?
But do I?
How you feel.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how to answer that other than answering your question with by meaning what you say.
Yeah.
But men in general are more likely to say what they mean.
Yeah.
Mean what they say. Versus women who are more likely to leave parts of it out.
Sure.
And expect us to
fill in. We're not good at filling in.
Which we're terrible
at. We're terrible at it.
I've told my wife before, like, you can't
be explicit.
You can't drop me hints.
Yeah.
You have to tell me if you want me to do X. Don't tell me that it would be nice if Y and Z happened.
Yeah.
So that X or whatever. You need to tell me please do X.
Yeah.
And I'll do it.
Yeah. Do you need the timeline? Because it seems like it's like, oh, I'll get to that tomorrow.
Sometimes timelines.
Yeah. Give me some more details as usual.
Yeah. Okay. When?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that, I mean, that's a distinction right there. And that whole like, men are waffles and women are noodles. Women are spaghetti and men are waffles, something like that. Google it. but there's truth in that. Like my wife tells me, like, if you had any idea what was happening on in my brain right now, your head would explode.
Yeah.
Because I have 30 things that I'm thinking about that have to happen within the next week. I have 20 things that I'm thinking about that have to happen in the next 2 days.
Yeah.
And I have 10 things that need to happen right now and 5 things that need to happen yesterday.
Yeah.
Like, she never said all of that to me, but I know
you can feel that energy coming off of her.
Yeah. And I'm over here going, Olympics are on. And curling, I think, is kind of cool.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, so
it's weird that they have the broom. What's the broom for? Yeah. And she's like all in her head about the beach trip that we're taking in 3 weeks and thinking about food. I'm like, well, we'll have food.
Yeah. For me, like, I'm thinking, well, that's in 3 weeks.
Exactly. I have more than 2.5 weeks to plan that, to help you plan that. I mean, she's like, well, I'm working on it right now. Yeah. And we don't see that. And that's just something we can't relate to because we do our things in boxes. Yeah. Like, I'm at work right now and I'm solving this problem.
Yep.
I have another problem, but that's in another box. And once I can get out of this box, I'll jump into that box.
Yep.
When we are called on to share emotions or talk about things, I'm not a talker.
Mm.
I've talked more in this last, like, what, hour and a half?
Yeah, man.
Than I think I have all week.
You've taught me a lot in this
and
last hour.
And my wife is going to be like, how come I didn't get any of those words? Because I'm out of words now. And she doesn't get any more words.
Beer? I entice you beer. With beer. No, I hear what you're saying, though.
So when we get called on to do things that we're not in that box, we like can't do it.
Yeah.
And if it's in a if you're trying to get us into a box that we don't know how to get into or we don't want to get into,
yeah,
it's not going to happen.
That's interesting. We're very task oriented. Just give me a task. I have a task. I can't do anything other than this task. I need to focus on this task.
Yeah, we're not good
multitaskers. No. We're not doing that.
I'm not.
I'm fucking terrible. I'm terrible at it.
Yeah.
And this, I invited you here. I told you what we were going to kind of try to do as best we both could. And it's our task right now.
Right.
And I feel good about how we've executed this task. So I guess as what we're trying to tell you out there, ladies, is give us this task. Like, you know what I mean? Like, sit down and have put us in a box, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. But be patient with us.
Patient.
I feel like I have to get personal about that. I grew up in an environment where I never felt like my feelings or my thoughts or the things going on in my head were really important enough to be given time.
Hmm.
Not that I was ignored or put down for having opinions. I was just never brought up to believe like I have something to offer through my thoughts and my words and stuff like that. So I think, and I don't think that that's uncommon.
No,
I think that's kind of a pretty normal thing, unfortunately. But I think you run up to a lot of guys that are like, I don't have I don't have the tools to even identify what I'm feeling or thinking about. Like, even all of this, like, gentle parenting stuff, I've had to kind of learn as I go, make up as I go, kind of learn the premise and then adjust. And actually, that's not a very good example. I don't know. What was I trying to say? You'll want to edit that out.
No, we'll find it. No, it all stays in.
You can't run this whole thing. It's like 2 hours.
Oh, I can run the whole thing.
I'm done with that.
People love it.
But the question is, why don't we share our emotions?
Yeah.
Because we don't know how. Because we haven't been given the tools to to identify how we're feeling or what we think about something, to give it the not the credence, but to give it the respect that it deserves. So I don't know how I feel about X.
Sure.
So that amplifies that it must not be worth
giving anything. Any attention to.
So not only do I not understand it, it's not worth anything. So why would I even say it?
Yeah.
Because it's just going to confuse everything.
Yeah.
It's not your fault, ladies.
Yeah. We're just...
we're just incapable.
We're just blunt tools. Do you would you describe yourself as an introvert?
I never would have before recently.
Yeah.
I've become more and more introverted the older I get.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it... how much of it has to do with having a kid.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of, well, bedtime has just kind of changed our nights.
Sure.
You know, pre-kids, you can go to a restaurant at 7 o'clock and have a drink and a nice long leisurely meal or whatever. But like with kid and bedtime, like we're eating dinner at 5:30 and we're in the bath by 6:15
Sure.
And we're hopefully he's asleep by 7:15 7:30 hopefully not 8
Yeah.
So it's like that whole like social aspect of our life has been, I almost said taken away from us, and that's, it has been, but that's not really
changed,
what I mean.
It's
shifted. Yeah. It's just been altered. Yeah. And I don't know if I liked doing all that stuff before because it was something to do and a way to give some energy and be around people. I don't know, but, well, I don't miss it anymore.
Yeah. It's the reason I asked that too, is cause I don't know if you're familiar with the Myers-Briggs, but I'm INFJ.
I do, but I am whatever, I'm whatever four letters that always forget what they are.
Okay.
So I have no idea what any of it means.
That's fair. Then it's real.
Yeah.
So I am like the most like sensitive and introverted. Mm-hmm. Like I'm the rarest type. And then I'm also a male. But what that means is like this right here, what we're doing, this is my jam. Like I love connecting with people one-on-one. Mm-hmm. If I get in a crowd, I just get... get overwhelmed a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, and I just shut down. But my point is that I also take time to process things. Mm-hmm. It takes me sometimes a day. Like somebody, a manager could tell me something at work, like something that I wasn't expecting or was disappointing. And I'll just go, and I'll sit there for a minute and not really know how to react.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't have the tools to access that feeling immediately.
Right.
And so the next day though, like I'll go home and I'll think about it the rest of the day, think about it during my run, think about it on my way to work. And I get to work and I'm like, there it is. That's how I feel. And so coupling that with like what you were saying, like you came up with this environment that didn't necessarily give you the tools to access that quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And then you couple it with being kind of introverted and having this, like, you know, you need time, like for me, at least needing time to process things. So if you ask me how I'm feeling in a moment, there it is. That's why I'm not going to be able to give you an answer.
Mm-hmm.
Just takes time. So
yeah.
Patience, like you were saying.
Mm-hmm. My wife is just like you.
Yeah.
She comes home from work some days, like if she's had a bad day.
Mm-hmm.
And she comes home and sometimes I know to not even talk to her.
Yeah, it's good.
Say hi, give her a hug, welcome home.
Well, if she's like me, then I'm sitting here thinking, yeah, that's good.
Yeah,
that's good.
I know. Have some space. And when you're ready, you can start processing some stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's just like you. And I'm very much like... I just kind of plow through stuff as it comes.
Yeah.
And don't really spend any time in how I feel about something.
Sure.
Or what I think about something, which means by the time I'm through it, I've like already forgotten.
It's gone.
It's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
what
I don't.
It? It's like, what was that feeling?
Yeah.
I don't even know what the feeling was.
Stay with it. I don't process it. I don't let it be part of the story of what just happened. It was like, oh, I wrecked my car. It kind of sucked. We got it towed.
Yeah.
It's total. We got a new car now. And whatever.
I tell stories like that. Like, I've been hit by a car twice, broke some bones, paid for my student loans. those things literally happened.
Yeah.
That literally happened twice. But it's just like, people, I kind of tell it just like that, and people are like, wait a minute, what? And so, yeah, it's like, you sometimes you don't give it the emotion thought in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an emotion anymore, which I don't know if that's good or, but it is what it is.
It is.
Great. So the last question here is, and this was an interesting question for me, just because it seems simple, but what are your passions and why? Why are those your passions?
Not simple.
No,
I don't think.
It's if you're talking about especially where they came from or why they came to be, it's not that simple.
Yeah. And maybe knowing what you know about me now,
yeah.
It might not be too surprising, if I said, I'm not sure.
Mm.
I have a hard time. What?
So I'm going to catch you right there. How does that make you feel to even say that?
Well, I think
to not know what your passions are.
I know some things that I was going to say is
yeah.
I even struggle with the term passion. I'm passionate
okay.
about.
That's fair.
And I'm not sure why. I don't think I can put words to it. But how does it make me feel to say that? Kind of neutral. I don't really feel either way about that
mm-hmm.
because I've thought about this a little bit.
Okay.
Even photography, I don't feel is a passion. Like when I think of passion, it's like if I don't X, I can't breathe. I will literally just become a terrible person, shrivel up and die.
Right.
And maybe I'm being too dramatic.
No.
Too passionate.
Yeah.
But I feel like right now, like, yeah, I love photography and I want it to be my job and I want to invest in it and I want my wife to be on board and I want, the freedom that it offers us and I want, that package.
Mm.
And I love that and I want that and I want to work for it. And maybe I'm not, maybe I'm all wrong in all of this, but, I don't know that I feel totally comfortable calling that a passion.
Hmm.
This is a stumper, I think.
Now that you're getting into it, I'm even sitting here, you know, listening to you talk and thinking like, well, I guess this isn't too simple.
Because
how do you even define the word? How do we even define the word?
Yeah. And I feel like the word passion, the term, what's your passion, has just been so stripped of what it's supposed to mean.
Have you been to business school?
No.
Find your passion. Dude, that's your job. If you want to be an entrepreneur, find your passion. Like, yeah, it's just stripped of meaning.
Yeah, well, there you go. I'm not entirely crazy.
Yeah.
But if you were to say something like, what are the super important things in your life right now? Like, I don't have a problem answering that.
Sure.
The super important things in my life right now are, I want to be a good dad.
Mm.
I want to raise a kind, sweet boy.
It's awesome.
Who shares, but knows that he has the freedom to not. And, I want to be a dad that's okay with that. And I want to be a husband that comes alongside his wife and helps her in all of her endeavors and tries to dissect that spaghetti that's going on in her head.
Yeah.
And I'm terrible at this. I'm terrible at these things. But I want to run. I want to be in nature. I want to make great photographs. All of these things take time and energy and effort.
Yeah.
And I guess to say the term, like, I guess those are my passions right now, is to just invest in where I'm at right now to make the best of it for my family.
That was beautiful.
I'm glad you say that, because I'm sitting here going, does that make sense?
No, that makes just perfect sense to me. It's even, you just said, like, I want to run, and I want to be a great dad, and I want to, you know, even the way you were saying it to me had more impact on me than you're like, you know, yeah, you do want to, you're like, I don't know, photography is like what you do, but it was like, you even just said, well, you know, even the way you said it to me was a little different than like, I want to be a great dad and raise a sweet boy. You know, you were passionate about it. I was just sitting here thinking about, you know, what I'm passionate about. And even like with running, I'm passionate about it because it keeps me connected to my dad. He passed away. And it keeps me connected to it. So it's something that I'm passionate about because it evokes that emotion in me. Mm-hmm. I love my job. I get to meet cool people. I work with amazing people. Mm-hmm. And I get to bring this like happiness to other people, the people who attend the events that I put on. But I'm not sure if the actual function of the job is what I'm passionate about as much as it is the people. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't know, like you said, even like I'm sitting here questioning all that. So that's a lot tougher than I thought it was.
Yeah. Yeah, it is hard.
Huh.
I think if you take it beyond its face value, because your passion is deeper than what are you super into? Or even what are you super good at?
Yeah.
I don't know if I was going anywhere with that.
Well, I mean, even like that, I'm good at some things, but that doesn't lead to me to be passionate about them.
Mm-hmm. And passion can be hard. It can be painful too. Running is an example that, I read something recently or heard a podcast or something, and the runner they were interviewing was saying, if running was a person in my life, I would have broken up with them so long ago.
Anyone who runs and understands
totally gets that.
Yeah.
Running is fickle and painful and tiring and glorious.
But it's fun when it's fun.
At the same time, when it's fun, it's fun. When it's amazing, it's amazing. It can take you to amazing places. You get to meet amazing people, but it will break you.
It'll break you.
And it will cut you so deep.
Yeah.
And things in our life are like that. Like kids, you know, they're amazing and they shape you in amazing ways and they teach you amazing things, but they will cut you.
Oh yeah. I taught elementary school PE for a while.
Oh God.
And there was three teachers and we literally have 100 kids at one time.
Three teachers.
Not enough teachers. Too many damn kids. And we're talking like second graders in an open field. Have you ever have you ever kicked over an ant's nest? That's what it looks like.
Yeah.
Damn it if they aren't fun, though.
Yep.
They light you up, but oh my God.
So much work.
It's so much work, and it breaks you.
Mm-hmm.
It breaks you at the end of the day, but you get back and do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good question.
Those are hard, though. Easy sounding, but...
Especially the second one, to be honest with you. I was given that question, and I'm like, is this something that women wonder what men think about? She goes, yeah. I'm like... Fair enough, I'll ask it.
Yeah. But you know why they have to think about it? It's because we won't tell them.
That's a good point. Well, now they know. Step one of them knowing is right now. Cool, man. Well, thanks for joining.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for the beer.
Yeah, we'll do it again.
Okay, I don't know what else I could give you.
Cool. Thanks, bro.
Yeah.
much love to Chris Lowe for opening up and sharing with me like that. That was really great for me. Again, I just learned a lot about, I think, gentle parenting and what it means to be a father a little bit more than I've seen from, you know, saw from my own dad. And it was inspiring to me. And I think, you know, if all fathers could kind of encourage this love that Chris is, would be a lot better off. And I think that's a piece that for me, I'll take away, as I kind of build this model for what modern masculinity is. And I just really, really admire Chris for sharing that with me and, acknowledging his fears and, everything. So thank you, Chris. That was incredible for me. Let's all, show Chris some love on Instagram at Chris Lowe Photo. That's CHRISLOW Photo. I will put all of his links in the show notes as well, so you can get at him for whatever you need. I do want to add a note about something I said, and this, try not to do this a lot because I know it's hard in a moment, but when I listen back, I kind of cringe sometimes at the things I say. And I guess that's why we have these conversations, but, it's always, I don't know, I feel better about offering some context. I mentioned the fact that I often find myself asking, is this okay? You know, when you're around women. And I don't mean that to sound like a complaint. It is certainly not a complaint. It's actually quite the opposite. I'm actually very happy that men are having to move throughout the world in a more intentional manner to simply think more. And I don't think I had anything in the way that I was acting that made me, you know, that I've eliminated since everything, since Me Too and since all that. But it's just making me think a little bit more. And I think men need that. And we need more practice in how we talk about things. So, just need to be a little more intentional. I think all of us do. But, ladies, be sure to send me your questions for What Women Wonder. Send reasonable questions that we can actually talk about. They can be funny, deep, somewhere in between, whatever you want. You want to hear two men talk about questions that you may have, please feel free to fire away. You can email those to me at the email address, show email address, mmprojectpod@gmail.com. And I will add those to the list moving forward. I do want to kind of end this with something my pops taught me and share my dream list of guests. This lesson that he taught me and this list kind of go hand in hand. So my dad always told me that it never hurts to ask, you know, it never hurts to throw something out to the universe and see what it will bring. So here it is. I want to share my dream guest list so people can help me make this happen. We'll see what happens. But number one on my dream guest list, Eddie Vedder, lead singer of Pearl Jam, one of my favorite bands. I just think that would be just really cool for me. Really love Pearl Jam, and he seems like a cool dude, just socially conscious and everything. Number two, Jim Carrey. The Jim Carrey now is much different from the Jim Carrey that I grew up with. You know, I'm 30 now, and, you know, when he's doing Dumb and Dumber, I don't know how long ago now that was, 20 years ago or something, but much different. But I really like what he has going on now and just his whole focus. And I just like to take a walk through his mind and see where that goes. Number three, Terry Crews. He's involved in the Me Too movement as a man, which I find fascinating. And, I would love to talk to him. Number four, Obama. I just admire him as a man. He just seems to be a great father, husband, politics aside. I just love to connect with him as a man, just to see how he kind of built what he's doing, as a man. And number five, Bill Murray, just because he doesn't give two fucks about anything. He just really owns himself. And I find that to be a beautiful thing. I think that can be a hard place for people to get to. I mean, yeah, he's a celebrity and he's got all this stuff, but he just owns it and he does what he wants and he seems just like a super happy dude. So, I'm not sure how that conversation would go, but it would be super fascinating. Cool. Please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. That's going to be the best way that you can help support the show at this moment. If you kind of dig what we're doing, there's only me. So if you kind of dig what I'm doing and what these other guys are doing, I suppose, give us a good rating, subscribe, help to give those numbers up, give us a little more visibility, and it'll help get these conversations out into the world. All right. Would appreciate that and be grateful for any time you can spend helping out. All right, y'all. Be present, stay open, much love.
And so there came a point in our evolution when we didn't guide life by just trusting our instincts. And had to think about it and had to purposely arrange and discipline and push our lives around in accordance with foresight and words and systems of symbols, accountancy, calculation, and so on. And then we worry. Once you start thinking about things, you worry as to whether you've thought enough. Where we're going, there are things for the eye to see.